Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Coming In For A Landing podcast on the Liberty Ballers podcast network. Here's your host, Paul Hudrick.
Hello, friends, and thank you for checking out the Coming In For A Landing podcast. I am your host, Paul Hudrick, and I just want to let everyone know that they need to subscribe, rate, download the podcast wherever you get your podcast on the Liberty Ballers podcast network. A great slew of podcasts we have, so please check them all out. And today I have a special guest, somebody who is taking on a much bigger role at Liberty Ballers, and I am very excited about it because I think he does a hell of a job, which is why I decided to give him a bigger role. But anyway, want to thank Jackson Frank so much for coming on today. Jackson, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate the kind words, and I'm excited to talk about some Sixers basketball. You know, I have my own podcast over Blue Wire, but it's been a while since I talked about actual Sixers basketball. It's been a lot of speculation and Ben Simmons talk and whatnot. I'm excited to talk about actual things that happened on a basketball court.
I will say it, that even though the game obviously did not go great, particularly from a Sixers perspective, it was nice just from, like you said, to actually talk about basketball, analyze basketball, actually analyze basketball games and not sift through Ben Simmons rumors and nuggets. And that was, a very nice change. And like, you say that too. And I just discussed the agenda with you before we popped on, and I didn't even think to say anything about Ben Simmons rumors, which is hilarious to me because that's how much I guess I don't want to talk about it. But I guess off the top, we should at least address it a little bit and kind of talk about the latest things that have come out. A report, there's been some rumors about Indiana being a possible destination. I know Ian Begley mentioned Caris LeVert being a name that has been brought up. And then also Kyle Newbeck from the Philly Voice is reporting that Ben Simmons' camp basically is wondering about a way to recoup fines that are currently accruing for Ben Simmons holding out. And basically that is not a thing. You don't get to recoup that. So that is an interesting thing. On the same day that Ben Simmons reportedly puts up his $3.1 million condo in Philadelphia for sale, maybe you could connect those dots, maybe not. But I guess, Jackson, I don't want to spend too much time on this because, like I said, I want to talk about Sixers basketball. I want to talk about the game that was played. But Indiana, Caris LeVert, does any of that do anything for you in any way?
Caris, not so much. I think he's a guy who can be pretty aesthetically pleasing to watch with his ability to get in the lane. And he's a pretty fun passer, but I'm not huge on him as an actual high-impact creator. I think he settles for a lot of tough shots. The defense isn't great. He's never been a very good three-point shooter. I'd be more interested in a package from Indiana revolving around Malcolm Brogdon and TJ Warren. Unfortunately, TJ Warren is, still out with a foot injury, which makes things tough. He's also, a pending free agent after this year. But a LeVert-led package, and I'm sure some other key rotation player or maybe one of the starters from Indiana would have to be involved, but LeVert as a headliner didn't do a ton for me, and I can't imagine it does a ton for the Sixers just based on some of the reporting. That it seemed like they're willing to play this out and see how long Ben Simmons is willing to stay away from NBA basketball, and their goal is to find a star level creator, whether that's Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, Damian Lillard, and Caris LeVert just doesn't meet that criteria. And I don't think Malcolm Brogdon meets it either. I think he's a better player than LaVert, but I think they're probably shooting for a little higher aspirations, given kind of where they are with Joel Embiid and how good he is, and kind of the goals they should have for a player as good as him.
Definitely, I think the term I've probably overused throughout this Ben Simmons saga is like in a vacuum. I like said player, in a vacuum, I do like Caris LeVert, and I think he would be a pretty intriguing fit on the Sixers and with Joel Embiid. But as you kind of already alluded to, as far as a headliner, as far as a value for Ben Simmons, no, I don't think that does anything for the Sixers. And I even think, as someone else speculated, throwing in Malcolm Brogdon with him, I don't think that does it for them either. You know, from the people I've spoken to, it just seems the Sixers are really, I mean, they're steadfast, man. Like, it's, we are going to make a move that's going to make us a championship team, or we're not going to make any move. And, you know, just to put it plainly, Caris LeVert and or Malcolm Brogdon, it just, I don't think it does enough for the Sixers. I don't think they have an appetite to make that move. So as much as, again, both those players in a vacuum, sure, I like them. You mentioned TJ Warren. That's another guy, you know, it's unfortunate the health issues that, you know, he's gone through, because I love his game. And I think he's another guy that I think is a very intriguing fit on the Sixers as a perimeter creator on the wing, and a guy that I think would have played very well with Joel Embiid, but just his health, you really can't, you know, it's hard to really see what his value is right now when we don't even know if he's going to be healthy to start the season. It appears that that will not be the case. So, yeah, I think it is, like you already talked about, it's a high level player or bust for them at this point. Like, they would sooner hold on. And like, to me, unless something changes drastically between now and the trade deadline, I think the trade deadline is the next time that we're going to see talks really pick up, because it's just the worst time to trade guys. Everybody thinks their team is good. Chicago, like you talked, you know, Zach LaVine, Chicago thinks they're really good right now. They think they can compete for one of the top spots in the East. Can they? I tend to not think so, but, you know, and maybe that becomes more of a realization as the season goes on. You know, Bradley Beal, that Washington team, again, they think they're better. I love Spencer Dinwiddie. I think that's a great pickup. Is that enough to make them any better than a play-in team? I don't feel good about that. So, you know, I think Daryl Morey knows that this is not a good time to trade players, and I think he's comfortable. He's been comfortable waiting this long. I think he's comfortable waiting for as long as it takes at this point. But yeah, let's talk about basketball, Jackson. Because
I do want to note though, yeah. You know, you mentioned kind of the season of optimism. I think that also applies to the Sixers, right? Like right now, you can totally say, okay, we're gonna wait. You know, we're gonna wait out Ben. We're gonna hope we can get off to a fast start with our schedule. But maybe the pressure mounts a little bit if they start 8-7 or 9-6. You know, last year they got off to a great start. They were pretty much atop the East for the entire year. That's not necessarily a given this season. So I'm curious if that, you know, I agree with you. It goes both ways, but I we saw kind of the first shoe drop in the Sixers camp, or the Simmons camp, or Simmons representatives and whatnot, when they didn't get money or they got fined for him missing a preseason game. I'm curious, like, when does the realization set in for the Sixers that, oh, our second best, you know, maybe our third best player, depending on Tobias, is not here, and we're a worse team without him. So, definitely matters for maybe teams the Sixers are trying to negotiate with, but also matters for the Sixers themselves. So I am curious to kind of see how that unfolds. The Sixers maybe get off to a suboptimal start, which was not the case last year. So, Morey doesn't have that experience under, you know, as Sixers, you know, president of basketball operations.
That's an excellent point, because we don't know how it's going to react. I mean, up to this point, Daryl Morey has kind of been like maniacally patient with it. Like, he really is just in no hurry. And so far, I think you have to say that's probably been the right strategy, depending on what, you know, from what we've seen of the offers that are out there. There's been nothing to me that I'd say like, oh man, I think Daryl Morey is kind of foolish for not taking that. I mean, I haven't seen anything that's really blown me over. So it seems like that's been the right move, but you're right. I mean, if they get off to a bad start, does that put more pressure on them? You know, I think as of right now, Joel Embiid really trusts Daryl Morey. I think that's critically important. So how long before Joel Embiid maybe gets a little antsy, knowing that he doesn't have, you know, he's still relatively young, but this is his prime. And you really, considering everything in the context of his career, you really want to take advantage of his prime. So, yeah, I mean, what point does that, you know, does it get uncomfortable in that regard, where maybe they're, you know, maybe Tyrese Maxey isn't quite fitting, you know, isn't quite grasping the whole point guard role as well as they'd hope, and they don't really have another option, which we're going to discuss, you know, Tyrese Maxey and Shake Milton in a little bit more depth in a moment. But yeah, it's not black and white from the Sixers standpoint at all. I mean, it's going to get very tricky if they do get off to a poor start, unlike last year when they got off to a great start. But yeah, transitioning to, you know, the game Monday night, for the most part, not very pretty from a Sixers perspective. I thought the Raptors I thought they had a lot more juice on top of perhaps, you know, being maybe a little bit more prepared, a little bit more up. And I just thought they were more up for that game. You could tell it meant a lot to them to be back in their building, and they have a lot of young, exciting players, as Doc Rivers talked about, a lot of long, young, exciting players. It's an interesting team that Toronto is building as they kind of do their, you don't want to call it a rebuild because they still do have some pretty prominent players, but a retooling, if you will. They have some intriguing pieces to go for that fit really well with what Nick Nurse does there. But the two players that really stood out to me the most, and I think anyone who watched the game would agree, Andre Drummond and his Sixers debut, so to speak, and Seth Curry. And we'll start with Andre Drummond. I know you and I, a lot of people kind of view this, Sean Kennedy wrote about it today, the idea that a lot of people thought it was a one-for-one. Dwight Howard, Andre Drummond, they're the kind of the same player. But I think you and I were both in the camp of like, no, this is an upgrade. Andre Drummond is a better player than Dwight Howard, especially at this point in both of their careers. So I guess just first of all, like what did you see out of him on Monday? And then like, where are the areas where you look at what Dwight brought to them last year, you look at what Andre could potentially bring to them this year. Where do you see those areas where Andre can provide an upgrade in that position as the backup five?
Yeah, I mean, I think, through the Sixers lens specifically, Doc is going to run a lot of bench heavy or sometimes all bench lineups. And I think Andre, gives them more, versatility and flexibility, offensively in that regard. Dwight is a pretty good finisher last year. He had his times where he'd fumble lobs and, set illegal screens and all those things. But Andre, isn't the same type of finisher, but much better passer, can do more with the ball in his hands, even if it's not as much as he thinks he can do at times, which we saw a little bit in the second half, when he played briefly against the Raptors on Monday. But I like that part. I don't think he's a great drop defender, in pick and rolls, but I think he's a little more, versatile in the sense you can play him aggressively. You can let him use his quick hands to force turnovers, which, helps the offense. If you can get out and run, you're more likely to score a bucket in the open floor than you are in a half court setting. So I like that. They both bring kind of the offensive rebounding prowess, which carries over. They both are prone to a heightened sense of confidence in their ball skills. Dwight more so than Drummond.
That's a great way to put it, by the way. A heightened sense of confidence.
I was trying to figure out how to phrase it in a
nice diplomatic. That's good. Yeah.
I think those are the big things there. I mean, they're both kind of mistake prone, but I think with those mistakes comes a greater end out. The outcomes are greater in Drummond's case than they are with Dwight. They're different offensively, but I think the passing is an advantage. The ability to create turnovers defensively is useful. I think he's a better dribble handoff guy. The Sixers obviously love to run dribble handoffs usually with Joel as the trigger man. And then, going back to JJ Redick as the guard, now Seth Curry, sometimes Tobias. I think you're going to see a lot of Tobias plus four bench guys again, like we saw last season. And I think, Drummond is a better complement there. He's not a great finisher, but he can get off the ground. You saw a nice, finish. I think he and Shake had a nice side pick and roll in the first half on Monday. So that's where I think the upgrades come. I think it's mostly offense, even if they're different players. But a lot of people harp on Drummond's inability to finish effectively. But I would like to find the numbers like on a given possession, right? Because sometimes he misses two or three layups and finally scores, and like, yeah, you go 1-for-3 at the rim, but in the grand scheme, you go 1-for-1. So those are where I think Drummond is an upgrade. And again, it's important to know that he's only going to play, 8 to 14 minutes sometimes. He'll play more when Joel's out, which is, going to be the case because Joel needs a little bit of maintenance. But I definitely think he's an upgrade, talent-wise, and I don't know how much it's going to be impact-wise, but definitely a better player than Dwight in my eyes.
Yeah, and I think, we already saw he hit three backdoor passes, one to Seth, one to Shake, I think, and then one to Isaiah Joe. And there were three, it's just three passes that you watch and you're like, yeah, Dwight Howard simply can't make that pass. He can't. And it's going to add an extra element, especially, as you kind of already talked about, Doc loves those all bench units. And if he's going to go to that, I thought at times last year, the offense got really, really stagnant when that group was out there. So to have a big man that can at least, and he also found, I think it was, he found George Niang at one point, or was it George? I can't remember who it was. He found somebody for a wide open corner three at 1.2, which again, it's just those little things that I don't think Dwight is capable of. And that I think Andre can find those guys. And, 100%, like he's he has to stay within himself. He has to play his role. He can't try to do too much because that's when he gets himself into trouble. And Doc even talked about the fact that he thought he was tired in the second half. And that's part of the, because he didn't expect, he wasn't anticipating him to play in the second half. And that might've been part of the reason for the turnovers. And maybe that's why he got a little, you know, reckless trying to do too much, you know, while being tired. But I agree with the idea of like DHOs. I mean, as long as he is, again, playing within the constructs of the offense, I feel pretty confident about his ability in that regard. And I think too, clearly him and Doc have a previous relationship. Doc's known him since he was in high school, and he really wanted to come here to play for Doc. I think he went as far as the other night and said, yeah, he literally wouldn't want to be anywhere else right now, which says a lot considering he's backing up arguably the best center in the league. And knows his role won't be as big. For him to say that, it's a pretty big statement. And with that said, I think too, like Doc will rein in his heightened confidence with the basketball from time to time. And you know, I think Andre will listen. I think Andre's going to be receptive to Doc's coaching. And let's be real too. I think Andre has a lot to gain by doing that, right? I mean, if he really solidifies himself this year and does a really, like when Joel, as you talked about too, Joel's going to miss time. Andre's going to get his opportunities. He's going to get chances to start games. So if he does his thing and plays his role and plays it really well, he's on a minimum contract for 1 year this year. He could play himself into a nice, he's still only 28 too, which boggles my mind. So I mean, he'll be 29 years old going into free agency next year. So if he can convince another team that, you know, he can fit into that role and do that and star in that, he might get some opportunities in the offseason. And I thought too, something that Doc brought up during training camp that stood out, he looks like he's in really good shape, which is not to say that I think he was necessarily in bad shape last year, but I think he is in really good shape right now. And I think that was noticeable too, you know, early on in that game. But to get to the other player who I thought, you know, really showed out, and especially in the second quarter, I thought he hit a couple, you know, pull up threes that were very aggressive in nature, then went on to attack a few closeouts and finish at the rim. Seth Curry, I thought, was very good. And I, you know, it's one preseason game. It's one, you know, a little snippet, but it made you feel pretty good that the player we saw in the playoffs, that aggressive version of Seth Curry we saw, could come over into this season. So I guess from your perspective, Jackson, just what you saw out of Seth on Monday, and if you're kind of feeling the same way that you think he can bring over, it wasn't just a hot playoff run, like he can actually bring that over into this regular season.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm looking for, I mean, I agree that the aggressiveness that we saw in that playoff run was still there. I am curious to kind of see if he feels the need to defer when Tobias and Joel are back in the lineup, because he was, you know, the best player in that lineup, right? Or the best player on the team, you know, here, Danny, best offensive player at the very least, you know, in that game. And so it's kind of, the responsibility falls more on him. So I'm curious, you know, when Tobias and Joel are back, if that's the case. But yeah, hunting his shot, you know, attacking the lane, he only took three threes, made two of them. So 5-8 inside the arc was encouraging. 11 shots and I think 14 minutes, maybe, I think 17, excuse me. 14 or 17, I can't, we had 14 points in 17 minutes. I was getting my wires crossed there. But yeah, I mean, you just saw him more aggressive in the postseason. You know, in the regular season, he took about 16 shots per 100 possessions, you know, in the postseason, it was up to about 18.5. So, and that's what you need, because he's, you know, he's at worst the Sixers' third best offensive player. I don't know if I would say he's better than Tobias, but he's a very good offensive player regardless. And you want him taking shots because he's one of the best shooters in NBA history. He's got a little bit of off the bounce juice as well. You saw a really nice skip pass from him too, for an Isaiah Joe three in the second quarter, which I liked. I don't know, like, I mean, that was one of the things too, right? And the only really reliable source of offense in that Hawks series, in the second half of it, you know, was either Joel at times, and even he struggled, or the Joel Seth two-man game, or Seth doing his own thing on the wing. So that was good to see, you know, that really nice, you know, that skip pass, because the Sixers have shooters. They've got flaws offensively, but there's going to be guys open if Joel and Seth draw attention, or Tobias and Seth, or, you know, Seth and Drummond, you know, and maybe some bench units. So I was really impressed with Seth. You know, the defense, I didn't get a good read on, a great read on it in the in the preseason. But I liked, he was active. He had a few steals, I think, snuck up on the Raptors a few times in the backcourt, if I recall. So really good start. And that's what you wanted to see. Maybe the playoff run is just a springboard into, continued aggression from Seth, which is important. We're not gonna talk about Ben, but they need somehow just collectively, pick up the slack while Ben's out. And I think, Seth continuing to be a phenomenal offensive player is even more confident in hunting a shot would be important for that. And you saw the start of that, in one preseason game.
Yeah, it's almost like I think what gives me confidence too, that this is not just the playoff run wasn't just an aberration, is that I think Doc has really empowered him to do more. And Doc has joked about it often. I think actually today at practice he said that Seth led the team in passed up shots last year, which I don't know if that was Doc being Doc or if that's something they actually track. I can see either being true, and it's totally believable, because it there were a lot of times where it seemed like Seth was passing up, semi open threes, which with him, how good he is, how great of a shooter he is. If he has any type of daylight, just let it fly. When you're that good of a shooter, to me. And I was also agreed with you. Like I'm really encouraged, by the off the dribble stuff. I mean, that's something that he's always taken pride in. I know that's when he first got here, he was really harped on the fact I am not just a shooter. I can do other things. I can play off the dribble. And Doc said that too when he got here. He said, when he killed us in LA, when he was with Portland, he killed us doing stuff off the dribble and Dallas and hurting us, not just from his 3-point shooting. It sets up the other parts of his game. But yeah, I was very encouraged by it too. That pass you're talking about with that Isaiah Joe shot, that's next level stuff. I mean, that's if he's able to combat an over aggressive closeout by getting into the paint and then finding shooters on the on the perimeter, that adds a whole nother dimension to his game. That adds a whole nother dimension to the offense. So that could be huge going forward. And I am curious, like you said, will it still be like that when Joel Embiid and when Tobias Harris return to the lineup? We'll see. I'm curious to see where the relationship is, that two-man game with Joel Embiid and Seth Curry, where that is currently. Hopefully we get to see that Thursday night. Very intrigued to see if that relationship is growing and where the chemistry is there. So we're going to take a quick break, but on the other side, we're going to talk about the Tyrese Maxey and Shake Milton, their kind of first night as the de facto point guards with Ben Simmons not here. Then we're also going to touch on Isaiah Joe, who I thought had a really nice night the other night and was talked about today at practice. So yeah, on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but we're going to pause for a quick break.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are back, and it's going to be talked about a lot, Jackson. The Tyrese Maxey, it's already been the talk of camp every day. Tyrese Maxey taking over for now as the starting point guard for Ben Simmons. For as long as that's the case, I would anticipate he's going to get the first crack to start the season. Will Doc pivot from that? We'll see. And then that trickle down of that is that Shake Milton is basically in charge of the second unit. He is the point guard. He is the guy leading that unit. So I thought Maxey was kind of a mixed bag on Monday. I think how Doc kind of categorized his camp is how I view that game. Is he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. I thought he was a little tentative early. whether that was, you know, adjusting to the position, maybe overthinking perhaps. And I thought as the game got on and he got a little bit of the rust knocked off, and you saw a little bit of, you know, using his speed and getting to the paint. And I thought he looked a little bit more comfortable as the game wore on. Shake, he really struggled from a ball handling perspective. He really struggled with the Raptors' ball pressure and their length and their size. And I do worry about him. I think I actually worry about him a little bit more than I do Tyrese Maxey at this point. But I guess just from your perspective, what you saw from both of those guys on Monday, and, you know, making it clear, you know, we're not overreacting here to one preseason game, but just kind of your impressions and maybe where you are on both guys as the preseason wears on.
Yeah, I thought Tyrese got better as the game progressed. I thought he got more comfortable in figuring things out. Because as Doc's talked about and he's talked about, it's a big difference going from, you know, the bench spark plug whose primary goal is to just get 2 feet in the paint and make stuff happen, to being the guy who runs the offense. And, oh, by the way, you're running the offense without your two best players to help you along in that journey right now. You know, the Raptors, we talked about, a lot of long, rangy wings. Scottie Barnes was picking him up, you know, what, three quarters of the court, you know, a lot of times. And Tyrese doesn't have a bad handle, but he's not super dynamic with, I think you saw him kind of struggle at times to just get to where he wanted to initiate, you know, possession. I think a nice change of pace at one point in the first half to like into a little finger roll. Another point, he settled for a deep floater. It might have been late in the clock, but I thought he could have gotten deeper. So would have been nice for one of his two threes to go down. But you saw him at least kind of experiment with a little bit more creativity off the bounce, getting to pull up jumpers. So that was encouraging. I would agree in general. Like I didn't take away a ton from the game from Tyrese, besides the fact that, you know, teams are probably going to pressure him a lot. And he's going to have to figure out how to work around that to get the Sixers into the spots and the possessions they need. But Shake, yeah, it just felt like kind of a continuation of last year when things weren't going well for him. Really forcing the issue. He would want to lower that left or right shoulder into a guy's chest and try and get to his spots. Unfortunately, Shake isn't that, he's not really a strength-based guard, so that doesn't work very often for him. So that was a bummer. I did really like, I think it was Furkan. He did a really nice pass to Furkan in the first half. Furkan cut from the corner and Shake had a nice like look away, you know, a live dribble pass there for an and one, I believe. But it was more of the same from Shake, like we saw last year when things were going poorly. And, I don't even know if it's surprising because you have to take all of camp talk with a grain of salt, but Doc had really talked Shake up during camp, and he did the same last year, and you know, Shake off to a great start. It looked really, really, you know, prescient from Doc, but this year that was not the case. So, and some of it too is like, I think at this point it's, and I don't want to be too hasty with, you know, my declarations, but it feels like the on-ball role isn't really suitable for Shake. I think he's better as an off-ball guy, and we'll see. We'll give him more time to kind of maybe showcase some of the improvements that he addressed in the offseason, but it just doesn't really seem to be his game. So I agree with you that, you know, Max was up and down. I think you saw some things that he'll definitely have to adjust to as he continues to grow into a starting point guard role as a 20-year-old. But Shake, it just felt like a continuation of, you know, most of the second half of last year when he wasn't, you know, really a worthwhile, a guy who was worthy of being in the rotation. So things could change, you know, they'll play the Raptors again. Maybe they'll get Joel and Tobias back and things will be a little easier for both he and Tyrese, but it's hard to feel very optimistic about Shake given kind of the way he ended last year and, you know, this first preseason game, which is only one game, but it was not maybe what you wanted to hear after what we'd heard, you know, during training camp.
And there were, you touched on the pass to Furkan, which I did think was a really nice find. And I thought from a passing perspective, actually, he was better than I remembered when I went back and looked at it. But yeah, I with Shake, it's been really the thing. I think since the bubble, really, the word was like pressure him full court and he'll struggle. And unfortunately that's followed him. And that's not to say, and I think you and I are on the same page. Like I still think he can absolutely fill a role as an off-ball player. Like, and I think he could be a pretty damn good one off a team's bench. And maybe, you know, he can handle the ball as a secondary guy, but not as a primary guy. I actually think I would have liked to see more of Maxey and Milton together last year. And I think if they were to get a starting caliber point guard one way or the other this season. I still like the idea of Maxey and Milton as a backcourt off the bench. I think that actually intrigues me a little bit. But yeah, I do wonder if that is, you know, because it's not just us reacting to one game, right? I mean, it's a continuation of last season, like you already said. And I think Shake has the ability to kind of score in bunches, as we've seen in the past. That's kind of what he does. So playing more off the ball, I think, is better suited for that, if that makes sense, because you're not relying on him to bring the ball up. You're not relying on him to create a ton of offense. But if he's feeling good, you can. But if he's not feeling that good, then he's more of a spot up guy, which his numbers historically have been really good. As you know, last year was a weird year for him, but historically his numbers are really good as a spot up catch and shoot.
He still shot 38.8% on spot on catch and shoot threes last year. Like, I mean, a lot of his efficiency was totally tanked by the pull up threes that he only 26% of. So you definitely see the potential as a guy who's taking more catch and shoot threes than he probably had last year.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, I think he's put in a spot right now where he has to be the on-ball guy because they just lack options. But I would like to see at some point his focus and the team's focus be on developing him more as an off-ball player. And I think, like I said, I think that's a role he could thrive in. And I would be intrigued to see what he could add. I think he's an NBA rotation player for sure. And just not a point guard, quite frankly. But we'll see. Maybe he surprises us. Maybe it was just some rust he had to knock off in game one, and maybe he comes out and looks much better, you know, the next three nights. He's going to get plenty of opportunities, you would think, over the next three preseason games to turn it around. We'll surely get plenty of minutes no matter who's playing, no matter what the case is. So definitely a wait and see.
I would add quickly, I think, you know, you mentioned that, like, they needed him to play that. Like, on Monday, yeah, they did, because they didn't have Tobias and Drummond was starting. They didn't have Joel. But I think a lot of this also falls on Doc's, you know, penchant for these bench-heavy lineups, right? Like you can play Shake as an off-ball guy if you keep, you know, Seth and or Tobias, you know, with the bench lineup, you let Maxey run with the bench lineup. Like, let Shake take a bunch of spot threes. Let him attack close-ups and get to that mid-range jumper that he loves. Those little leaners and crafty plays that he was really good at the start last season. So I don't want to cut you off there, but I do think some of it, you know, falls on Doc, you know, better, you know, structuring lineups that, you know, suit what Shake does well offensively, rather than saying we're going to put four bench guys out there and the one defensive minded starter or something, and Shake, you have to create. Like, that's just not his game. We have ample evidence at this point. I think he could really do well in a different role. And it's kind of a bummer that I want to see what things look like with the full, you know, complement of players. And, you know, maybe that doesn't even happen until Ben Simmons trade falls, but it was a little disappointing for them to watch all of last year and say, okay, Shake, you're going to continue to have to create. Like, that's just not his game. I would have liked to see them, you know, maybe try and tailor him into off-ball role, like use these preseason games to get him reps as an off-ball scorer. And we didn't see that. So Shake has his own faults, but I think a lot of this falls on, you know, on Doc and better, you know, constructing, you know, lineups and rotational patterns that suit, you know, the skill sets of his players and recognizing what those skill sets are.
I think that's a really fair point. I do. If you watch Shake last year, I don't see how you could have been confident that he could have filled the role that he's currently filling right now. And that's not a knock on Shake. It's just a matter of not, you know, what you already touched on is not playing to a guy's strengths by asking him to fill a role that maybe he's not best suited for. And I think he could thrive, like I already said, I think he could thrive in an off-ball role. So it is disappointing that it doesn't seem to be the case that that's going to happen, at least to start the season. It looks pretty clear that Tyrese Maxey is going to get the run with the starters, and it'll be Shake Milton leading the second unit. I mean, I know some people that you know, on the beat were a little surprised that Doc has, in a way, kind of handed this role to Maxey and had Shake as the bench guy. Like, maybe kind of to your point, maybe if you started Shake, that takes a little bit of pressure off him because you have so many other options offensively, whether it's Seth, whether it's Tobias, whether it's Joel, and that could just take a little bit of pressure off of Shake. And then Tyrese can kind of run the second unit and just kind of, you know, do his thing. And maybe there's like a little bit, you know, he could play with a little bit more confidence and a little bit more loosely because he doesn't have to worry about, oh, I have to get Tobias the ball, or, oh, I have to get the Joel the ball. He can kind of just do his thing and create on his own and use his speed and everything to his advantage. Him and Andre Drummond in the pick and roll will be very interesting to watch over the course of the season. So, I mean, and that's not to say that that couldn't still happen. Doc Rivers could very well change his mind and maybe want to get a look at that, because he's even kind of said that this starting lineup isn't written in ink. It could change, and it could change depending on matchups as well. So we'll see what happens. I don't have a ton of optimism for Shake as a point guard. I have optimism for him as an NBA player, as an off ball player that can help, you know, provide bench scoring, but I don't see it as a point guard. One guy who's I guess right now you would say, you know, pretty firmly on the outside looking in when we're talking about starters, we're talking about the second unit, kind of an 11th guy, I guess you would say right now, is Isaiah Joe. And I was impressed with him on Monday night. I thought he stood out in a game, again, where not many people stood out. I thought he did both ends of the floor. Defensively, he chucked up 8 threes and made a really nice backdoor cut that Drummond hit him on, and he finished with a dunk. That was a nice play by Seth. I think Isaiah understanding the spacing in that play and finding that little spot to get open and make himself available to Seth is encouraging. So, yeah, a lot of things that I liked from Isaiah Joe. And Doc talked today at practice about, you know, trying to find a way to get him on the floor more. I know some people ran with that on Twitter. We're like, well, he's the coach, you can just throw him in there. It's like, well, no, I think what he meant was he's happy with the starters, he's happy with the second unit. So how does he get Joe reps without taking reps away from somebody else? I think that's what he was kind of inferring by saying that. But first, what your impression was of Joe from Monday night, and do you see a path to minutes? Do you think he potentially could get a look from Doc Rivers at some point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I saw your report or tweet that, you know, Doc was complimentary of Joe and they want to find him more minutes, I can't help but think back to last year when Doc had said that Isaiah Joe had worked his way in the rotation, and then he maybe got what, 2 or 3 more games the rest of the year in the rotation.
I didn't think it was that. I think it was like the next game.
Yeah, it was very contradicted. I know there's a lot that goes into coaching, but it's, you know, at this point, I got to see it from Doc that he believes in Isaiah Joe rather than just saying it. But yeah, I was impressed. And, you know, I tweeted during that game, and, you know, maybe it's something that I've maintained throughout, you know, even part of this last year and, you know, over the offseason, that, like, I think there's a case to be made that Isaiah Joe could be more valuable to the rotation than Shake. And that's not because I don't think Shake could play the same role that Isaiah Joe could. They're both good shooters who, you know, maybe struggle with other aspects. But Doc doesn't really seem for them to have the same role offensively. Whereas Isaiah, when he's in the game with other rotation players, he's an off-ball shooter. He gets some point of attack reps defensively, which is very good. Like, I think he's a pretty dang good, you know, navigator of screen, which is important as a non-ball defender. Despite not being super strong, he's very physical, which helps as well. You know, moves his hips quickly, you know, cuts off angles for guys, which helps. So I think there's definitely ideally a path for him to be a useful rotation player because, I mean, he and Furkan have like the two quickest triggers on the team, I think, from three. Maybe I'm forgetting anyone, but I mean, it's basically those two, right? And they need that around, you know, Tobias and Joel, and, you know, depending on who they needed last year around Ben. And maybe they still need it to depend on who Ben, you know, garners in return, if he is dealt or when he is dealt, however you prefer to term that. So I think it definitely makes sense as basically just a 3-and-D guy. You know, he took a ton of threes last year per 36 minutes, got up 10 threes exactly, shot just about 37%, only shot 33% on twos, which is not ideal. Doesn't really get to the rim, but I think as a spot up guy, you can, you know, shoot on the move as well, and is a pretty useful defender in certain roles. I think there's absolutely a path to him getting minutes. I don't feel great about it coming to fruition, just given that I think he probably, you know, either usurp Shake or Furkan. I think Furkan is, they need Furkan for what he brings, his off-ball movement, his quick trigger, and the fact that Shake, you know, seems to be, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but Doc seems to have some sort of affinity for Shake. I know he hasn't always been a prominent player in the rotation, but you know, still got run in game 7 against the Hawks, and that, you know, with all due respect to Shake, he hadn't played up to that standard. So I'm a little doubtful, but I think it's something they should try, because if he hits threes, the defense is going to be there, I think. And you know, he's a smart team defender as well. I think it really makes sense to give him a chance.
His on-ball defense has been much better than I thought it was going to be at this level. He's been every chance he has gotten, he has never looked out of place on that end of the floor, which is saying an awful lot for, you know, I think he's what, 21 now, and he was 20 last year playing, you know, his first full NBA season, only played, you know, limited time at Arkansas. I mean, it was really impressive to see his, like you already mentioned, for a smaller guy, the way he navigates screens, the way he can just anticipate and beat guys to spots, like that's a skill that defensively, it's not something that's, how do I put it? Like not every guy has it. And to have it for him at this level already, it's pretty damn impressive. And offensively, as you already mentioned, the shot is there. The quick trigger is there. Clearly he needs to learn the NBA game a little bit, you know, get more comfortable when it comes to spacing with off ball movement, comfortable with the players around him. I thought it was interesting. I just saw Derek Bodner of The Athletic. He just posted something about the idea of, you know, Isaiah Joe and Joel Embiid had never really played together because basically Isaiah Joe is playing in garbage time or, you know, with a bench unit when he was playing, and he didn't get much time with Joel Embiid. But could there be something there with those two, you know, a two-man kind of game, especially since we saw, you know, Joel, you know, you don't want to rely on Isaiah Joe for playmaking ability. You don't want him, you know, handing the ball a ton, but I think he has proven that he's not inept in that area. Like he can, you know, dribble a little bit. He can find he can hit a pocket pass every now and then. So, you know, some dribble handoff stuff with Joel would kind of intrigue me a little bit. Maybe we see that Thursday night, maybe we don't, but I do have to call you out, Jackson, because in your bell ringer post, how does Isaiah Joe not get any love, man?
Yeah, I think I just like settled in on a few guys before the game really got out of reach. And then I think Isaiah played well in his first stint, but then maybe hit a couple of threes, you know, once the game was really, really out of hand. I mean, it was out of hand basically from the midway through the second quarter on. But yeah, he just escaped my mind. So for anyone listening who saw that and took exception, I apologize. I will acknowledge it in Thursday's bell ringer. I'll give Isaiah Joe a shout out for his previous game, but yeah, just totally an omission on my behalf there. So I apologize to the other Isaiah Joe supporters and Isaiah Joe himself if he listens to the podcast or reads Liberty Ballers. But yeah, I think you mentioned some of the ball skills there, and you mentioned kind of never really playing with Joel. Like you go back and watch Summer League, and you watch the times that Isaiah runs, you know, when the game is out of hand, they like to give him some ball handling reps. Like there's clearly some sort of belief in that becoming a part of his game in some capacity from the coaching staff. And so really liked what he did in Summer League at times. Had some really creative ways to like get into the paint despite not being very strong or even very like quick. I remember he had one play where he like went behind the back to like split like a trap or a hedge in one Summer League game. Had a really nifty like behind the back pass to Filip Petrushev on one play. So as I mentioned, like there's at least something there, right? Like I think you at least have the groundwork, you know, potentially laid with Joel to run those two-man actions. And Isaiah's such a good, smart off-ball mover. So I really like kind of what he could bring. Again, you know, some of it is the physicality and you're getting there physically. You know, I wouldn't say physicality because he has that, but it's just getting there physically and having the strength and the balance to withstand playing inside the arc, because he just hasn't really been a very good inside the arc player, you know, offensively throughout his career. And you have to kind of be able to handle those sorts of rigors when you're running dribble handoffs. I think you can get there. But you know, when you look at it through the lens of, you know, what can you do offensively in a rotation spot beyond, you know, hit some movement threes and spot up threes and be a good defender, which are useful things. I think I could still be worthy of a low end rotation spot, but more than that, you kind of have to look at those things. And just to know, Isaiah is 22 now. He was 21 last year.
Look that up too.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if he was 21 or 22, but yeah, I really like what he can bring. And I've largely been impressed by what he can do. It's just a matter of, you know, getting a little better on the margins, but even now, I think there's absolutely a chance he is worthy of, you know, eighth, ninth, 10th man in the rotation, which has value. And I think just those quick triggers are important for the Sixers.
Yeah. The age thing, I mean, that's so young, 22 years old going into the season. I mean, he's still such a young guy, and I agree with you. I think they clearly see some untapped stuff there with as far as playmaking and ball handling. So it's intriguing that they kind of gave him that rope a little bit in summer league and allowed him to do that. It does make you wonder, you know, how much they think he can develop in that regard. He is skinny. You know, we talked to him today. He's still a skinny guy. I mean, he's young. He's a young guy, only played in the NBA one season. I think he did say he added a little bit of weight this offseason, but he's still a pretty skinny dude. So, but yeah, the fact that he is, like you already talked about, the fact that he is so physical and so willing to kind of mix it up, that's super encouraging. And, you know, defense, so much of defense is just flat out like effort and wanting to do it. And I think that part of the equation he already has, which is an outstanding sign for a young player. But we're going to wrap things up on that note. I want to thank Jackson Frank for hopping on today on the Coming In for a Landing podcast on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. I want to say thank you all so much for listening. Please rate, download, subscribe wherever you download your podcast. And I appreciate all of you for checking out the pod. And we will talk to you next time. Cool. Whew.
Yeah,
thank you very much, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
I am so bummed I left off Isaiah Joe. As someone who's been a proponent of the game, I feel like I let him down, let my own brand as an NBA analyst down. But he'll get a shot on Thursdays. I'll make sure. Hopefully he plays well again. And it'll be he'll get double shot.